Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
What's going on, Katie?
Sorry, everyone. Sorry. I'm the reason we didn't have an episode on Sunday. My internet wasn't working. I'm also, I know I say this all the time as like a joke, but I'm so stupid busy.
Also, though, is it really your fault or is it Mother Nature's? Because that was a crazy storm.
That was a crazy storm. It was awesome.
It was awesome. I don't think it was your fault. We can't blame you for that.
Well, had I been prepared when I was supposed to be prepared, that we wouldn't have had to wait. It's fine. I can own the fact that I'm so busy and my time management has not been great, but I'm working on it.
I'm proud of you.
I'm trying.
That's what matters.
That being said, unfortunately, the other things I have going on right now are just like things that I pay for, like school. So I can't just not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this, I can be like, hey, sorry, I can't make this happen. I'm working on getting better and I'm sorry. That's all I have going on is I'm trying. This is me trying. Ashley, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Katie just remembered what I have for us.
I do. And that leads me to one thing that I want to say. And I just want to remind everyone before Ashley says, we have been saying for a long time that if you message us or anything like that, that we're going to make merch out of it. And I just want to be clear that I think that that means that this legally, we have given a heads up.
Yes. We say it all the time. If you all message us weird stuff, we're going to make merch out of it. Oh, too bad. So sad. You've been warned.
So people have been warned.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley, continue.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Katie. May 25th at 6:26 p.m., I received a Facebook message from someone that I went to my first boarding school with when I was between the ages of 11 and 13.
So long ago.
So long ago. And this is like someone that I regret that 12-year-old Ashley kissed this person, but also like not someone that I ever talk to, ever. Like this person just not on my radar. Honestly, I forgot that you existed. So
yeah,
6:26 p.m. on May 25th, I got the message. Wait, I thought you got married. Okay, tell me you're looking at my Facebook page. Thanks.
No introduction.
No introduction. No, hey, no greeting. How are ya? Actually, it's crazy because before this, the last message that was sent to me must have been something about, oh, it was other voice messages. By the way, I'm going to play a voice message from this person. But it was voice messages asking something about my relationship. Like, clearly this person was trying to hit on me. And I said something about us like saving up for a wedding or something like that. So that was 2017. So that's the last conversation that we had. And it was very quick. I gave one answer and that was it.
2017. That's pre-pandemic. That is a different universe.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I thought you got married. I opened it and I saw it. And I just need y'all to know that like, I always open messages and then don't say anything because sometimes I just don't have the energy in me to have a conversation digitally. And I think that that is relatable. So I didn't say anything. And around 20 minutes later, at 6:57 p.m., I got another message that said, maybe I was tripping.
I want a sticker that says, maybe I was tripping.
Maybe I was tripping. And then,
oh my god, green beans in the passenger seat.
2 hours later, right? This is 8:56 p.m., so that's 2 hours later. Yes. Did I do that right? Okay.
You did.
I was not alone when I got these messages, and I'm really glad that somebody else was there to experience this with me. So at 8:56 p.m., after I opened that other one and didn't respond, and like, it's Facebook, you can see that I looked at it.
It always says
yeah. that. And he goes, and you're gone.
Okay.
And then I got a 25-second voice message, which I'm going to play for you now. And this is what we're going to make merch out of. And I bet as you listen, you know exactly which part I want to make merch.
The bitch has pronouns. The bitch has pronouns. How old are you? And you have pronouns now? You are fucking insane. You're not going to amount to shit. Well, you already have amounted to a little something, but you you're going to die the fuck alone.
Oh.
I'm so fucking happy about that shit.
Oh my god.
Okay, you Kentucky ass motherfucker.
I forgot about the end because I've just been so focused on the bitch has pronouns.
Yeah.
Oh.
It got like weirdly
pronouns now.
Violent. That's so homophobic. He got that shit in right before Pride Month. The bitch has pronouns now. So that's going to be the merch. It did get a little scary there at the end. Oh, and then by the way, when I opened that, when I got the notification and I went to listen to it, I could see that he, it says that he's no longer available on Messenger, which means that he blocked me. So he sent that and then was like too much of a little bitch to stay around to find out. And
to find
me.
Out that he also has he him pronouns, which like that's the other thing, like your pronouns are just listed as she her.
Yeah. So,
he's just upset that your pronouns are listed.
Like those are the same pronouns that I've had since birth, bro.
That's like what? More vitriol than I have ever gotten.
For having they. Absolutely wild. Like, why does that bother you so much? That's crazy. Like, you, what? We made out when I was 13, 12, 13. Like, you know I'm a girl.
I'm just so focused on the use of the word now. Not just that you have pronouns, that you have them now.
Did you forget what we learned in, like, what? The second grade? Like, I think you need to go back to school. I think that your education at our boarding school was wasted.
It's wild.
So I'm going to be making merch out of the bitch has pronouns now.
I also am going to throw my hat in the ring for some ideas. And ooh, maybe our patrons can vote and then we'll sell one. Ooh. And then patrons can have an option to buy both.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's a good idea.
Okay. Just because we need to think of more exclusives for our for patron pals.
I'm going to be honest. I'm very privileged. That was the first bit of homophobia that has ever been directed at me. I truly have not experienced that because I think I was just straight passing for so long. Mm. But it's also wild because, like, he doesn't even know that I am gay because it's not really like anywhere on my Facebook because I don't really use Facebook at all. Like all my gay shit's on Instagram.
You got hate crime for the wrong thing.
I got hate crime for the wrong fucking thing, but it was still homophobic as fuck.
Oh my god.
What? So to end out Pride Month, that's the bitch has pronouns now and they are she, her.
Mm-hmm. The bitch has pronouns now.
That's my update. Oh, I'm going to the Lunar Fair on July 5th. If any of you are going to be there, New Jerseyans. Fine.
Hell yeah. All right. Sweet. We'll just get into it then. My first line of my notes is, sorry, y'all, Katie is very busy and very stressed. And thus my time management is really lacking lately. That's so real. Yes. I wrote these notes a while ago. I'll be honest. this is a last minute episode. It was supposed to be. Last minute episode means we're going to talk about something that I already know a lot about, or something that I thought I knew a lot about until I actually did grown-up research about it, and not just a hyperfixation of a child, which is a lot of how my things I know a lot about, quote-unquote, episodes. That's what I really mean when I say that, is I hyperfixated on this as a child. Let's talk about the Titanic. I did this really cool tour at this museum, this like traveling museum that came to Portland like way before COVID. And it was just like little pieces of the Titanic, and they would give you a little ID and you get to check in about the person that you are all throughout and like see what it was like. And then you got to find out if you lived or died. I died. Most people on the Titanic died. Spoiler alert.
What a game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do the same thing at the Holocaust Museum.
Yeah.
It's not usually like for funsies. It's not like a game. God. It's like a learning experience. I'm so sorry.
I came into that too excited.
I know. Because we're talking about the Titanic. And it's like, you get to be a person. But it's exciting to learn about their voyage and like what they were going to. And, mm-hmm. you know, for those people who do survive, that's cool.
Yeah.
Good for them.
That's wonderful.
That is wonderful. So yeah, let's talk about the Titanic.
Okay.
I never questioned why it sank. It hit an iceberg. But there's a lot of talk from this author and historian, Tim Malton, who like decided to like quote unquote reopen this case, because apparently there are a lot of weird instances that surround the ship.
Really?
Yeah. That led to some like really bogus conspiracy theories and misinformation.
What?
So we're going to get into it.
Dude, I have never in my life heard anyone talk about Titanic conspiracy theories.
Right?
Like, obviously I know the difference between real life and like the movie, but I've truly never heard anyone have like a conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. I was just like, yeah, they hit a fucking iceberg and it was a long time ago.
Like, all of this started because I saw a documentary where this guy Tim Malton, he's in the documentary a lot. I don't know if he was exactly part of the creation, but I think he was why the producers like recreated it. And it was called The Mysteries of the Titanic. And I was like, what fucking mysteries are there?
You hit a big
it hit an iceberg and it went down. But there are some weird things about it. There is one that is so ridiculous that Tim doesn't talk about, mm-hmm. but a podcast about conspiracy theories brings up this more like creepypasta internet lore
okay.
about some of the antiquities that the Titanic was carrying over. This theory claims that there was this like haunted piece of Egyptian archaeological things. There wasn't. So if anything you ever see pops up with mummy board and Titanic, it's not real, but someone write that story.
I'm also like, why is it always haunted, possessed mummy? Like, why is that always the story?
I think it's a majority of misunderstanding Egyptian belief,
mm-hmm.
racism,
mm-hmm.
surrounding that misunderstanding, and also potentially the time period in which like people were all up in Egypt sealing shit at this time, mm-hmm. and like bringing it back on big ships, and people would want to connect a big accident with some sort of curse. It's the same way that people automatically think of like voodoo when they think of like bad magic, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's a huge misunderstanding of a cultural belief, but okay. But that's not what this is about. This is about the Titanic. The Titanic was a part of a trio of ocean liners. So it had two sisters, the Olympic and the HMHS Britannic. The Olympic and the Titanic are technically the RMS. Didn't look into the difference. Don't necessarily care. Not super interested in boats. But, you know, if someone wants to look into that, by all means. The focus of these three ocean liners was luxury and a little bit speed, but the owners of this trio, the White Star Liners, knew that they couldn't compete with the other companies and their speed. They were top notch in speed. So White Star Liners were like, you know what? The next thing that we can do is not only have lower prices, but also offer speed in style. So the entire focus of these three ocean liners was luxury. The Olympic and the Titanic are basically twins. There are very few differences between the two. The Titanic is just a little bit bigger, like a foot bigger.
Oh.
And I think the Olympic had 16 windows along the side, and the Titanic had 14. But the big launch was actually of the Olympic. That was the first big one, and that was a bigger deal when that happened. The Titanic wasn't as big as the Olympics launch, which I did not know.
I didn't know that either, and I'm like, the Titanic just had to come and steal the show.
Abso-fucking-lutely it did. And the Olympic actually comes in to play with some of the conspiracy theories.
Oh, interesting.
So we will talk about that later. The parent company of White Star Liners was actually owned by J.P. Morgan.
Oh, wow.
And J.P. himself was supposed to be on the Titanic for its voyage, but his health wasn't doing great, and he couldn't really handle that, so he actually rescheduled for a different liner.
Wow.
And people were like, that's weird. He knew, and that does come into play later
with the conspiracies. Yeah.
Yes. But like I said, the Titanic launch wasn't a big enough deal for him to push through his health issues to be there for. And he had been there for the Olympic launch.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's not as weird as people love to claim that it is. And their big focus is that they think that he wanted the Titanic to sink for an insurance claim.
Okay.
So we're just going to get this out of the way now. The insurance for the Titanic didn't even cover the cost of the entire ship. This sinking was a huge loss for them.
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck kind of policy could you possibly have that would cover something like that? Like, that's insane.
I mean, that's insane. Their policy was for $5 million, which is a lot of money. And there are some policies where you can cover a full loss. But they were so sure of their ships that they didn't do that, which we will get into a little bit later. Because had this crash happened differently, it would have been different, which I also didn't know. Mysteries of the Titanic, am I right? So this was not insurance fraud. He didn't want this to sink. That conspiracy theory can just stop here in the episode. Like I said, the big focus of the Titanic was in style. And in style for everyone, which is a new thing for different ocean liners. There's this huge misconception about the second and third class passengers and their treatment in the Titanic. Normally on other ships, they didn't have beds. They were expected to stand and they were told to bring their own food.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So in the Titanic, we're going to get into what their stations of the ship was like, but this was a luxury experience for everyone on the ship.
They said affordable luxury.
Yes. So that was really what they were focusing on. And of course, safety. Everyone was talking about how the Titanic was unsinkable.
It feels like they really jinxed it. They really jinxed it.
They really, really did. This is just like a brief overview of the building of the Titanic. mm-hmm. so that we can kind of talk about how it fell apart later.
Okay.
So the first step is you lay down the keel, the ship's backbone. Isn't that cute with the keels?
Oh, and they love boats. Sailing and boats.
Put that in. Wow. Put that in just because people that we went to high school with would know how cute that is.
Oh, our teachers.
And it's the ship's backbone.
Oh, they were lovely people.
They're so lovely.
Best science teacher ever.
So yes, that's the first step, is you build the backbone, the keel, and that was actually laid down in Ireland. The ship was built in Ireland.
Oh, wow.
Which I had no idea. The next step is its hull, its main body, which includes the bottom, the sides, and deck. It doesn't include the superstructure, the masts, or the rigging. And it's talking about the watertight frame that gives the vessel its shape and its buoyancy, like what allows it to float through the water. The entire hull was constructed using over 3 million rivets made of mild steel plates and consisted of 16 major watertight compartments separated by 15 bulkheads. The idea was that there were so many chambers to keep the ship afloat that even should something happen and a few of them fill with water, they're watertight, so they'll close and the rest of them can keep the ship afloat. It also had a double bottom hull, which provided an extra layer of protection against leaks. It was very, very secure. The rivets that I talk about come into play because people start to question their stability later.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, will get into it. On top of the hull is the superstructure, which includes the ship's 10 decks and its various funnels, which had different functions and included different things from passenger accommodations to just spaces for machinery to like move this fucking ship. And the interior of the Titanic was the height of luxury. It included first class staterooms, dining salons, ooh, lounges, smoking rooms, a swimming pool, and a gym.
A swimming pool?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Right?
Is that in the movie?
No.
Ugh.
I don't think they included it in the movie.
Wow.
I know. What a missed opportunity.
Damn. What year was this built?
This was built in 1910.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. A swimming pool?
A swimming pool.
Damn. Okay.
The second and third class accommodations, well, less luxurious, were very comfortable and provided amenities. I'm going to describe the ship and, of course, how it compares to the movie. I have to. First class included luxuries, like the height of luxury at this time, with elaborate wood paneling, very nice furniture, and like the softest fabrics. Some suites had like private promenades and were set up the way that Kate Winslet's character Rose had multiple different dressing rooms and like an ensuite bathroom and like a living room in their whole area for just the wealthiest of the people.
It's like a penthouse suite in a hotel.
Yes, exactly. In their first class dining area was the largest room of the ship, and it was capable of seating over 500 passengers.
Wow.
Which of the 2,200 people on board, that's like a bulk of the people.
Yeah.
There were ornate decorations, crystal chandeliers, and they served gourmet meals. The Grand Staircase, which I think is the most famous kind of image of the inside of the ship, connected the upper decks, was adorned with oak paneling, little bronze cherubs, and an ornate glass dome. It was, quote, quiet and elegantly decorated, a nice room where passengers could read, write, and socialize. It included leather chairs and card tables, which were, of course, reserved for the male passengers.
Mm.
They did have a palm court and veranda cafe, which was described as light and airy spaces with wicker furniture and potted palms, offering a relaxing environment with ocean views. The swimming pool and Turkish bath were the facilities for relaxation and leisure. Oh, and a steam room.
Wow.
1910. The gymnasium was equipped with the latest like machines. It's actually like they had like a workout area. It's amazing. Second class accommodations were comfortable and well furnished. Of course, less luxurious than first class. Tim Maltin says in one of his interviews that the prices would kind of like go down by a third based on every time you went up. But for some of the lower classes, like the second and third class accommodations, they were paying like the modern day equivalent of like around $500, mm-hmm. which was like 1 or 2 pounds. Like they were paying very, very little to stay on this amazing ship. Second class accommodations did include a dining room, which was elegantly decorated and served pretty high quality meals. It also had a smoking room and a library. The third class accommodations were basic cabins, but were clean and functional rooms that were kind of set up dormitory style, shared by multiple passengers. Mm-hmm. A dining room was provided, and it was a large room with long tables and benches serving hearty, simple meals. But again, many other liners required them to bring their own food.
Yeah, at least somebody's cooking for them.
And the ship had running electricity, which a lot mm-hmm. of these people like didn't have in their own homes. So this was like a luxurious experience. Yeah. And like, fuck the rich, of course. But I want to really tamper down the misconception of the way that the second and third class people were treated by the staff and some of the wealthy first class passengers mm-hmm. were actually like very heroic people. I commend what they were trying to do. And it's like a bummer that it didn't work out, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And they did have a general room, a communal space for socializing, playing games, holding events, maybe falling in love with a passenger and bringing her downstairs to dance. I'm gonna, of course, quote unquote, get this out of the way. I love this. James Cameron's 1997, I thought it was later than that. God, I was so young. Film The Titanic is renowned for its meticulous attention to detail in recreating the ship's interiors. So the depiction of the grand staircase mm-hmm. is, quote, remarkably accurate, capturing both the intricate woodwork, bronze cherubs, and glass domes. Wow. So like, that was it. What you're picturing, there you go. The opulence of the dining saloon and the crystal chandeliers, fine china, and elaborate decor were very exact. They did a lot of work on the costuming and just kind of the lavishness, the lavishosity, I don't know the word for it, for first class accommodations. And the vibe of just the whole ship is really captured and is remarkably true to historical accounts. The smoking room specifically, with the leather chairs and card tables. And like, reminder, James Cameron went down to like explore, like, you know, he really was like a big Titanic buff.
He went down there to explore?
Yeah. Didn't he do that before he did the Mariana Trench?
Oh my God. What? I have no idea. Katie, you know more about this than I do. I've just watched the movies and maybe seen a documentary. The movies.
Yeah, Mr. Cameron dove 33 times to the shipwreck from 1993 through 2005.
33 times? That's mm-hmm. wild. Also, I can say movies because that shit was on two VHSs.
It was on two VHSs. I was obsessed. My mom really treated this hyperfixation with like a lot of respect.
Aww.
Because it started with being in love with Leonardo DiCaprio. Mm-hmm. And then like pivoted to just the Titanic as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I remember this amazing book that she got me specifically about the decorations, the menu, the desserts, and the costumes, and about how much research went into like making this happen. I was obsessed with the Titanic. This comes up a little bit later, but James Cameron is kind of leading the charge, I guess, about wanting to bring the Titanic up from the ocean.
Wow.
We'll talk about it. But yeah, that is a conversation that is happening. There's a whole article about it in the New York Times from like 2003. Like this is not an old thing. Like he still is like, I love the Titan.
This is this man's life work.
Yes. Yes. Well, and he talked about how like a lot of the things that he saw in the Mariana Trench and like underwater was the inspiration for the world in Avatar.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, this motherfucker is obsessed with the ocean.
I mean, it's a mysterious fucking place.
Mm-hmm.
If you're into it, how could you like not be, you know? There's so much we don't know.
Of course, he's fascinated by the Titanic.
Is he autistic?
Probably.
Should I take that out?
No.
Okay.
No, he probably is. He probably is. While the movie does depict the more modest accommodations of the third class passengers, it did dramatize the conditions to heighten the contrast with first class luxury.
Okay.
For example, when you pop in that second tape of your VHS, the third class passengers were not locked away. Remember those little gates that they had to like climb through and figure out? There were barriers that were put up between first class and second class and kind of the limitations of like what rooms they had access to. But they were not locked away from getting onto the boats.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of what actually happened is the staff didn't notify any of the passengers for about 20 minutes.
Oh my God.
Until they were like, oh shit, no, we're sinking. That's happening. And once they all were like telling everyone, that's when the barriers between all of third class and everything was broken down by the staff. And the staff led all of the third class passengers that they could up to the lifeboats. The reason that there's a higher number of deaths from third class passengers correlates to the time it took to get up there from the distance to the lifeboats, as well as a few other things like larger families of people in third class didn't necessarily want to separate with the quote unquote women and children rule. You have to remember that this is like women and children of, you know, the early 1900s. So like if you're a 13-year-old boy, you're not a child. You're a man. And a lot of those families were like, no, we're not going to leave. This is all I have. This is everything to me. That kind of comes into play versus the way that the movie was like, no, we're just going to lock the poor people away. That's not what happened. And I think it actually really undermines the heroic actions of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
I get really, really angry about that because the members of the staff specifically are on record from the survivors to be incredibly heroic, helpful, and have saved countless lives. They didn't decide to just like lock away and stop caring about the poor working class people, who in actuality is most likely the demographic that they belonged to.
Mm-hmm.
So like, let's put the blame where it actually belongs, which is like on the designers and the people who decided that it was unsinkable. And I don't know, men who thought that they could overpower the ocean. Like, I guess that's why I never thought there was any mystery. I was like, y'all were... narcissistic enough to think you could dominate the ocean. That's insane. So speaking of these bad designers of the ship, a lot of people talk about how the designers and White Star Line prioritized the aesthetics and passengers' comfort over the amount of lifeboats on the deck.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
A lot of people are like, there weren't enough lifeboats on the Titanic, and there definitely were not. The original design allowed for 64 lifeboats, but then when they were thinking about that kind of in practice, they felt like it was too cluttered. So only 20 were installed to maintain the ship's elegant profile and open deck space.
Stop it right now. 64 and they did 20.
I want to be so very clear that the Titanic actually carried more lifeboats than was legally required by the Board of Trade Regulations.
Oh my God. Okay, but that regulation, was that put in before they made something as enormous as this ship?
Yes, it was, Ashley. Oh my God, it's like you're reading my fucking notes. At the time of the Titanic's creation and construction, maritime safety regulations were incredibly outdated and did not account for the size and capacity of this new generation of ocean liners. British Board of Trade regulations only required ships of 10,000 tons to carry a minimum of 16 lifeboats. The regulation did not scale with the size of the ship. It was more about like the total capacity. It was more, yes, what you were saying. How do I describe this? I'm trying to think of the right metaphor. Because ships were still very large. Yes. It just wasn't about carrying that many people.
Yeah, it was mainly just commercial before, and now it's passenger, so they didn't account for the actual body count. They're just looking at the size of the actual container.
So it had much more lifeboats than was legally required.
Just so far below the bar what was necessary.
It had the capacity to carry 1,178 people. This was far short of the total number of passengers and crew on board, which is over 2,200.
Why did anyone think this was a good idea? You know what it reminds me of? Not testing the crash test dummies in the proper way because the regulations don't exist, but you could actually just do better. You could have just added more boats, but you didn't. And you were like, well, regulation doesn't exist. Fuck safety.
Oh my God. Sometimes I swear to fucking God, it's like you can read my notes. The thinking of the designers was the way that steamships traveled were, you know, everyone heading to New York is on kind of this part of the current and everyone leaving New York is on this part. So the idea is with these three ocean liners that are all doing their thing and all traveling consistently, that between that and the other ships that are also traveling, these lifeboats aren't going to be the permanent and like sole means of survival. They're actually going to be more intended to ferry passengers to rescue vessels. So they're like, this is our means of transportation because we have an outside the boat safety plan.
Where was that plan?
Their outside the boat safety plan got real fucked. That comes into play because we're talking about the designers right now. Outside safety plan is other people. But they did kind of, they tried. They weren't complete idiots.
20 boats, man.
20 boats. The designer of the ship did die on the Titanic.
Oh.
He's in the movie. You know the guy with the clock?
Yes.
That's the designer of the ship, Thomas Andrews. Mr. Wow. Andrews. Yeah, so he went down with the ship as he tried to save as many lives as he could. He didn't just stand there like waiting to die like the movie, but he died. He died on the ship.
The movie does just depict him as just standing there.
Yeah, and when Rose is like going back to like try and go find Jack or trying to find a way out, I think. Mm-hmm. And he's in like the dining hall, mm-hmm. or maybe even the staircase, and he's like, "What are you doing? The ship's going down, Rose. Like, this is not a good idea." Like, and I think at one point he even said, like, "I didn't account for this." And we are about to get into a play-by-play timeline of what happens to the ship, where I will go over exactly what happened and what exactly Mr. Andrews did not account for, including the fuck-up of their outside safety plan and, like, what went wrong there. But yeah, he was saving a lot of people.
That sucks that I didn't really show that in the movie. It was on two VHSs, so how much detail could you really put in?
Yeah, he was so focused on like making the ship look good. Who was, I can't remember Billy Zane's character. I can't remember what his name was. He's like kind of depicting one of like the soon to be wealthiest people on the ship, and he's a real asshole. Okay. In the movie, Billy Zane. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the IRL Titanic, John Jacob Astor was the wealthiest man on the ship. Okay. And he too was heroic AF, died saving people's lives. Aww. Like, died on the ship saving people's lives. So there were, like, quite a few, and I don't think they name him in the movie, but, mm-hmm. like, what I took away was, like, the rich men on that ship were assholes, when in actuality, a lot of them died on the ship trying to save other people, and, like, yeah. died with the staff trying to save other people. The maiden voyage began on April 10th, 1912, from Southampton, England, with the plans to stop in France and Queenstown, Ireland, before heading to New York City. It carried 2,224 passengers and crew, including some of the wealthiest people in the world, as well as many immigrants who were seeking a new life in America. We will never know exactly how many people died, but the rough estimate that we do have is that there were around 706 people who survived.
Okay.
So let's talk about the timeline of the night, starting at 11:30 p.m. The Titanic is sailing at a speed of about 22.5 knots under a clear, starry sky with calm seas. It's important to note two things. One, it was a new moon. Ooh. So while there were a lot of stars, there was not a lot of light. And two, calm seas mean that it is very difficult to spot things in the water because waves are not crashing at the base of things floating. You're not seeing the things, you are seeing the water's reaction to it. Mm-hmm. At 11:35, the lookouts Frederick Fleet and Reginald Lee are in the crow's nest. And they note very unusually calm water. They also note that they do not have access to binoculars. Like, later it is testified they did not have access to binoculars. Some people say that that's because at night it's easier to have the whole picture rather than be looking through binoculars. And some people say that you should have binoculars for when you think you see something. Either way, the binoculars probably wouldn't have helped. So that's something that people don't really need to be focusing on. At 11:40, just 5 minutes after they are noted to be in the crow's nest, Fleet sparks a dark object ahead, which he identifies as an iceberg, and rings the warning bell 3 times and telephones the bridge. A minute later, the first officer, William Murdoch, orders the ship to turn, quote, hard a starboard, end quote, to the left, and for the engines to be reversed in hopes that they will steer it kind of away. The Titanic begins to turn a little bit, but it's too close to avoid a collision, and the starboard side of the ship scrapes along the iceberg and creates a series of punctures below the waterline. Here's the thing, though. Had the Titanic hit the iceberg head on, it would have not sunk. And, like, there is multiple studies, engineers, and evidence to prove that now. The intention was to hit, like, for those things to hit it head on, not to have it scrape along the side the way that it did. Fuck. Damn it. At 12 a.m., midnight exactly, 19 minutes later, Captain Edward Smith arrives on the bridge and is briefed by the first officer. The ship at this point has completely stopped, and Smith orders a damage inspection. In the movie, there is kind of a jolt of, and passengers are like, what was that? In reality, the ship was so big that a lot of people didn't feel anything.
I feel like that makes sense.
Yeah, there was no reaction. The most hubbub amongst people happened about 20 minutes later when the ship stopped moving and it got very quiet on board. When those engines stopped, that was a bigger jolt. That's what alerted people.
That must have been so creepy.
Yeah. That's not what you want to hear in the middle of the night. Because it's midnight.
In the middle of the ocean.
It's midnight. Like, people are asleep. Thomas Andrews, the ship's builder, begins the inspection of the damage, and he finds of the 16 spots in the basement that we talked about before, 5 of them are completely flooding. The ship totally could have handled 4. 4 of them flooding, not a problem. No issues. That 5th one fucked it completely.
Oh my God.
And the thing is, like, that year was such a huge year for icebergs. Like, an unusually high amount of icebergs had come down in the current. I don't think a lot of ships are being hit and found their ways through the amount of icebergs unknowingly than the way that it happened to the Titanic. Now, because of the Titanic, we have people kind of monitoring that. But, like, it was a very bad year for icebergs. They did everything they could to stop it.
It's kind of amazing how just these little things are causing such a catastrophe. Like, if you hit it head on, it would have been fine. But mm-hmm. you were doing what you thought was the right call, and you turned a little bit for a safety measure, and that's what fucked it up. And then this is like, 4 would have been fine. 5? Too much. Of course it was 5. Oh, that's wild.
Well, because if you think about it, they had 16 of them total. So mm-hmm. they're like, if a quarter of these go down, not a problem. That's totally fine, which I feel like is reasonable mm-hmm. for them to think. But once it went over a quarter, they're like, no, once you're more than 25%, the boat. And that's physics. That makes sense to me. Question mark. That's when Andrews goes to Captain Smith and is like, yeah, the ship is for sure seasinking.
Oh my God.
And it's going to go down in like 1 or 2 hours. At this same time, the ship had just kind of entered into the area where it could beep, 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 little Morse code, send messages, and land and other ships could hear it. So all of the passengers who had messages that they wanted to send, which is part of this luxury experience, the little messenger guy was sending those out, and they were backlogged because they weren't able to reach people. So they had messages to send out. And when this other ship that was kind of like close by and had stopped because of the icebergs wanted to warn the Titanic, they messaged them over in Morse code, but they messaged them, like, for some reason, weirdly casually, according to sources. And the guy who's, like, trying to send all of these rich people's messages literally was like, shut up, I'm busy. And that formed a lot of conspiracy theories. But it's the equivalent of this guy, like, typing away, and some guy comes up to him and is like, hey, man, what's up? And he's like, dude, not right now.
Yeah.
When he should have been approached with, like, emergency, stop, icebergs. So that factor kind of plays into some of the conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people kind of bring that up. But that guy was just doing his job and ended up staying there until the ship lost power. Like, they sent out the distress signal until the ship lost power. So yeah. I want to also, like, stomp out that thing. That kind of, like, messenger of the Titanic ignores advice about icebergs. Shut up, clickbait.
Well, I feel like it's just a very human, I'm overwhelmed reaction.
Oh my God. If some other ship approached me casually when I was working like that, absolutely. That's not how you're supposed to alert people of responses. Like, no, not bad. You did that wrong. That was not cool. And to be fair, the people on that ship, the SS Californian, we kind of get into that. The people who did not come to their aid felt like shit about it for the rest of their life. Distress flares went off, but literally, like in the movie, they were like, they thought it was fireworks. Aww. Like, it didn't look like flares. It looked like a celebration. And then it was too late to help by the time they understood what was going on.
Yeah.
It was just a few minutes after Andrews reports that the ship is going down that an order is given to uncover the lifeboats and prepare them for the launch. We're about an hour past the ship hitting the iceberg at this point. The wireless operators, Jack Phillips and Harold Bride, are instructed to send distress signals. The first one is sent out with the ship's position given as 41 degrees and then 46 north, 51 degrees and 14 west. I'm not exactly sure if that's where they went down and stayed down. I don't know if that is the home of, was it Ocean Gate's destruction? Those numbers are heavily associated with the Titanic. At 12:40, the first lifeboat, number 7, is launched with 28 people on board, despite having the capacity of 65 people.
What?
So why are these ships so light? A lack of motherfucking communication. No drills for evacuating had been run because the ship is unsinkable.
Okay. That is like safety 101 should have happened before y'all took off.
Bro, it's
set sail.
1912. Safety who? Don't know her.
Where are the regulations?
Regulations? Couldn't spell it. No, thank you. No, don't care. They don't care. The other thing is that no one had told the crew, because no drills had been run with the crew, that these ships and their cranes had been tested at the weight capacity. They knew the ships themselves would be able to hold that many people based on the size, but they weren't sure if the cranes that were lowering the ships down could carry the weight of that amount of people. So they kept it very light out of fear that if they put all 65 people on it, that it would just snap and break the cranes, which would then kill more people and destroy more lifeboats, which they did depict that happening in the movie, but that didn't happen IRL because the staff were like calm and collected and were like actually like trying to, they were trying. No drills had been run. It was 12:45 a.m. that the distress rocket is fired. More lifeboats are prepared and launched, but again, not many of them are filled to capacity due to fear of overflowing, but also the confusion and reluctance among the passengers. For the reason that I talked about earlier, people are like, no, I'm not leaving my husband and all of my male children who are above the age of 10 because you think children can work. That they just, one, safety. Not necessarily the safest thing to do for women at this time. Two, for a lot of these people, that's all they had. They sold everything they had to get this ticket over to America to start over. They can't leave half of everything on the ship. And a lot of people weren't fully awake, weren't fully aware of what's going on. They didn't feel the crash. They just felt the boat stop. There was no clear communication really happening, and panic hadn't necessarily kicked in yet. It's 1 a.m. when lifeboat number 5 is launched, and the forward part of the Titanic is noticeably lower in the water, and the tilt of the deck becomes a little more apparent. 20 minutes later, the next lifeboat is launched when Officer Light Troller starts enforcing the quote women and children first policy very strictly because the lifeboats are getting less. And that's a policy that started in play with a previous boat crash. I'm not exactly sure the history necessarily behind it, but if people want, I can look it up and we'll talk about it later. It isn't really until 1:30 a.m. after lifeboat number 3 is launched that passengers are becoming very aware of the seriousness of the situation. Just like the movie, this entire time, the musicians of the ship are in fact on the deck playing music, hoping to calm people down, as it is staff and many first class passengers who are helping people get onto these life decks or these lifeboats, including John Jacob Astor and first class passenger Molly Brown. Lifeboat 8 is launched at 1:35 in the morning, and the ship's bow continues to dip deeper into the water. 5 minutes later, the band continues to play on deck to calm passengers as lifeboat 12 is launched and panic completely sets in among the remaining passengers. The angle of the ship's descent is massively and visibly increasing to the people in the lifeboats who are getting further. The stern rises higher and higher and is marked at like one of the highest, not one of the highest points, but like one of the higher points before the power goes out at 2 a.m. And that is also when the last distress signal is sent out. Lifeboat number 14, the last lifeboat, is launched at full capacity as the stern continues to rise out of the water. 5 minutes later, the bow is completely submerged. Passengers and crew can be seen scrambling to the rear end of the ship. The ship's lights flicker at 2:17 a.m., and the ship breaks in two between the third and fourth tunnels. The bow section is rapidly sinking, pulling people who are in the water down with it as the stern briefly settles into the water, but then quickly fills and begins to sink itself. It's 2:20 a.m. when the stern of the Titanic disappears beneath the surface and the ship itself is completely submerged. It's estimated that it's around 2:30 to 2:40 a.m. when both sections of the Titanic would come to rest approximately 1,970 feet, which is 600 meters, below on the ocean floor, scattering debris and personal items among the wreckage site. Despite plenty of survivors recording and accounting that the ship broke into, their stories weren't believed because of how known this ship was for being unsinkable and like amazingly built. And also that it's a weird way for a ship to sink. People didn't believe that she split in two, literally until Robert Ballard found the wreck of the two sections in 1985.
Imagine experiencing that and then people not fucking believing you. Like, that would drive me crazy. That would drive me crazy. I'd be like, I experienced this insane life or death shit. And you're going to tell me that this didn't happen.
And you're going to tell me no. You're going to tell me it didn't break in two. Yeah. So for a long time, whether or not the Titanic broke in two was a mystery until the wreckage was found.
Mysteries of the Titanic.
Mysteries of the Titanic, if you will. Of course, we were born into a found Titanic world. The way that it broke confused a lot of people. That is where the construction of the hull and the 3 million rivets that were included come into play. Just before the Titanic had launched, there had been one of many, this happened a lot, it sounds very scary, coal fires. Coal, C-O-A-L, fires in the steam room of the ship. But that was apparently a very common thing. People were like, no, 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 that did not weaken the hull of the ship. The issue is that there's a, after testing pieces of the Titanic, there was apparently like a high percentage of something known as slag, which is residue from like welding and building shit. Okay. That makes things more malleable than they're supposed to be. Ooh. So it was an issue with like the actual material, not necessarily how it was built or how it was designed. The lifeboats containing the approximately 706 survivors remained in the freezing North Atlantic waiting for rescue. They were found by the RMS Carpathia, which responded to one of the distress calls, and they arrived approximately 4 a.m. and began rescuing the survivors. The last lifeboat is said to have been picked up around 8:30 a.m., and the survivors were taken to New York. Some of the heroes from that day who deserve a highlight: Thomas Andrews, who spent his final moments assisting passengers and crew. He directed people to lifeboats, provided life jackets, and offered a lot of reassurance, and ultimately perished with the ship. A character who made it into the movie herself was known as the unsinkable Molly Brown. She took control of lifeboat number 6, encouraging the women in the group to row and maintain a high morale. She also argued to go back and rescue more people, showing huge strength, resiliency, and bravery. During the crash, she was reading her book and didn't come up until the ship stopped moving. Originally, she refused to get onto the lifeboard and spent as much time as she possibly could helping other passengers onto these boats. Her whole thing was like, I found places where I could be useful, so that's what I did. Mm-hmm. She's also quoted as saying, like, the less time you spend thinking about yourselves in these situations, the better off you're going to be. She only found herself onto a lifeboat after being forcefully dropped 4 feet by a crew member onto said lifeboat.
Oh my God.
They were like, no, be safe. Basically, she was such an amazing person that even the crew was like, you've done enough. You need to live. Once aboard, she quickly tried to turn around, as I said before, to go and get more survivors. The man who convinced the boat not to turn around was not stoked with her kind of taking over the leadership and was kind of mumbling to himself, we're not really going to survive with Molly in charge. And Molly is said to have told him, quote, keep it to yourself if you feel that way. For the sake of these women and children, be a man. We have smooth seas and a fighting chance.
Wow. Oh, I love her.
Right? Amazing. Harold Bride and Jack Phillips stayed at their posts, sending out distress signals until the ship lost power. Their efforts were crucial in alerting nearby ships, including the RMS Carpathia, which is the ship who rescued the survivors. Jack Phillips perished while Harold Bride survived. Shit, I forgot that. The captain of the RMS Carpathia, Captain Arthur Rostron, responded incredibly quickly to the Titanic's distress signals. He then navigated his ship through the dangerous icebergs at full speed and was like extensively prepared to care for the survivors. He made quick and decisive actions that saved all of the lives that were saved. This was one of the most notorious dates in America, one of the largest, I think, at peacetime group of sea deaths that happened. And it is, of course, incredibly important that we respect what is essentially a large grave site. There is, however, as I mentioned before with James Cameron, a push to see if we can bring up what remains of the Titanic. Tim Maltin, who I talked about in the documentaries before, himself is also very interested in preserving the remains of the Titanic, as it is just going to continue to disintegrate at the bottom of the ocean. I don't know how they would go about doing it. I think they would have to take the time. However, they believe it's possible. They're like, yes, we could do this if we wanted to. And I'm curious what your opinion on that would be.
Well, I think my first thought is, because it's been there for so long, what is the impact on the ecosystem down there to be? Because I'm sure that throughout all that time down there, things have started to grow on it, probably. So I wonder how that would impact the environment that it's in.
There are pros and cons for getting the ship out of there. One of which being that it is not necessarily a healthy environment for the ocean. Mm-hmm. Having all of these items in there, taking it out and taking out this metal that is essentially just rusting and corroding. Mm-hmm. Into the water would have potentially a healthier long-term effect on the ocean.
Okay.
As well as the idea that there are like man-made ways to rebuild coral reefs and okay. things like that. I believe that that is part of the idea of it can be done, because mm-hmm. James Cameron is nothing if not someone who is obsessed with the ocean.
Yeah.
I mean more in the concept of like disturbing the gravesite of over 1,500 people.
That's what we're thinking. Okay.
That's why I want specifically your who works in that field opinion.
Let me think about this. God, this would be a great question for Lauren.
Could something be done similar to the statue that was placed in the path of many of the slave trading ships to honor the enslaved people who jumped off of these ships to avoid being put in enslavement? Could a statue be placed there that is healthier for the ocean?
Certainly.
Would that be enough to honor them? And then also physically disturb where they're living by removing the remains. You know what I mean? Like, is that enough?
So I believe that asking if it's enough for a monument I think you would need to get that perspective from someone who either like had ancestors who passed there. Like, I think that that is who would need to be taken into account if we're deciding on what to do with it, because that truly is like their loved one's final resting place. Is a monument enough after disturbing their whatever could possibly be left of their remains?
Yeah.
So I think that ethically, and I think morally, I think getting permission from next of kins of people who've passed there would be like the best way to go about that. As far as like, I guess, a spiritual sense for the people who died there, it feels like I would have bad karma for moving them. You know, I'm not entirely sure, but I feel like I'm not the person who should be allowed to like make that decision or really have an opinion on it. I would love to. I'm just going to send a Snapchat to Lauren and see if she responds at all. But we're talking about the Titanic, and ethically and morally, what do you think about people removing the Titanic to preserve it out of the ocean? And then like in that, the people who passed there, their remains potentially being moved. Like, what do you think about that? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, if you're going to dispose of someone's remains into the ocean, you have to like contact the EPA. So I'm sure the EPA would have to be involved in also the removal of things like that too.
Oh, 100%. And it's like a debate amongst experts how they would even go about recovering any of the major pieces. It's a full debate. They're still discussing how they would want to go about doing that.
Yeah. Have they put forth like any, like what are their ideas?
So the New York Times article includes a question about, he's sort of a self-described centrist between a preservationist, Robert Ballard, who found the wreckage, mm-hmm. and a professional diver, French, professionally, but he dives for archaeological digs. And his name is Paul-Henri Nerjolet. And he actually died in a submersible going down to the Titanic. So it is also now his final resting place. Mm-hmm. They all disagree on how to go about doing it. Mm-hmm. So there's not even really a full agreement amongst professionals. Subpilot and explorer is how they describe Paul. This is a quote from James Cameron. Quote, he was a legendary subpilot and explorer, and we spent many exciting hours going over our Titanic videos and comparing notes. He recovered many small artifacts, such as the crow's nest bell, and I find it so moving to see it in the various exhibits, like what he found in the various exhibits around the world. That said, I disagreed with him about some of his plans to recover such things as the bow anchors, though it was always a friendly discussion. I'm glad that some of those plans never came to fruition. So they even disagree about removing small pieces of the Titanic. The other issue of this is that the Titanic lies in international waters.
Oh.
So it's not necessarily owned by anyone. And that means that the idea and argument of trying to get it out of the water could go on forever,
mm-hmm.
based on that fact alone. Until someone is like, the Titanic's wreckage specifically is poisoning all of the fish, mm-hmm. or someone comes hard down on the other line, we're never going to have a firm ownership of this. And thus no one can really be the one who makes this decision. In all likelihood, the Titanic will remain at the bottom of the ocean. As experts continue to debate and discuss the ethical and physical and environmental impacts on having visitors down there, taking up small pieces. I mean, this is an ongoing topic that at this point has been going on for over 100 years. People have been having these conversations since the Titanic sunk.
Yeah.
And will most likely continue having them until it is fully gone. That is the end of my notes. I told Ashley that there might be a second part because I recently got a hold of a book from my local library. Support local libraries. So I don't know. Or we're going to be talking about something else. Who knows? Not even I do.
flying by the seat of our pants.
Always. But yeah, that's my Titanic episode. Jesus Christ, an hour and a half.
Thanks, Katie. That was great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So many things I didn't know about the Titanic.
Right?
At one point, I was like, Katie, do you even know about the Titanic? Because you kept being like, things I didn't know.
I thought I did.
I loved that you texted me earlier and you were like, I really thought that I knew about the Titanic, but I did not.
I knew nothing. I knew nothing. I also texted to you and was like, I know this is the totally incorrect response, but I'm probably going to book a cruise now.
And then you were like, oh, these aren't even that expensive.
Really not. I really thought they'd be more. It's the wide brim hat. I don't know what it's done to me, but I'm looking into cruise tickets.
Wide brim hat bitch summer.
It's wild. She crazy. So yeah, sorry. But I hope that this extra long episode about the Titanic that I think was a little bit more unhinged than I intended on it being makes up for it.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.